Here is your Radio Theater Channel weekly podcast for download. The RTC still has the very best old-time radio on the live streaming. And if it's music you love, tune in to the RTC Music Channel, where this link and many others are on our website at oldtimeradiolisten.com. Now, here's Jim.
This is the RTC Weekly Download. I'm Jim Dolan, your host for this hour. Today we have somebody you probably know about if you're a nostalgia buff, a movie buff, so forth. We have Orson Welles in a program he starred in called The Black Museum. Now, The Black Museum was about Scotland Yard's Museum of Crime, and the items in the museum were indicating a specific crime. That's why they were in the museum. So there you go. That's a background on The Black Museum. This program is The Mandolin String, the 25th in the series.
Orson Welles, speaking from London. Black Museum, a repository of death. Here in the grim stone structure on the Thames, which houses Scotland Yard, is a warehouse of homicide, where everyday objects, a crumpled newspaper, a tin can of lighter fluid, a small radio, all are touched by murder. A mandolin string. Familiar object.
I'm told, Inspector, that mandolins are mighty popular with young folk these days.
Popular? Yes, they are. However, I'm rather happy to say their popularity is confined to music, not to murder.
And today, this mandolin string can be found in the Black Museum.
From the annals of the Criminal Investigation Department of the London Police, we bring you the dramatic stories of the crimes recorded by the objects in Scotland Yard's Gallery of Death, the Black Museum. In just a moment, you will hear The Black Museum, starring Orson Welles. Museum starring Orson Welles.
Well, here we are in the Black Museum, Scotland Yard's Museum of Murder. Here lies death, arranged neatly on the shelves and tables open to your view. Now, here's a spoon. It's a simple household spoon. Our murderer was meticulous. With this, he measured out a careful dose of poison. That oar up there on the wall, that was used by the stroke of a famous rowing aid at Henley. Later, it was used in anger, swung at a man who stood on the edge of a pier, stunning him. The man drowned in the Thames very quickly. Ah, here we are, the mandolin string. Just a coil of rust-spotted wire now. String from a mandolin. A relic of another era. An era of polished carriages, well-groomed horses, simple, sedate living, Edwardian England, and Louise Evans.
Louise, my dear.
Shh. Stuart, darling, I'm playing for you.
In more ways than one, she's playing for you, Stuart.
Louise, you've got to listen.
Go ahead.
quiet, son. She'll listen. Just say the right words.
Louise, I love you. You're adorable.
You're getting closer, Stuart. You're doing better now.
Louise, my darling, will you marry me?
At last. That's the way, Stuart. You see? I told you she was playing for you. The church organ, not Louise's mandolin, played them up the aisle that June. They were quite happy, quite domestic, particularly on the quiet winter evenings.
You're looking very well tonight, Louise.
Thank you, dear. Anything of interest in the newspaper, Stuart?
No, nothing you'd want to know about.
Stuart, darling, I wonder if you'd mind...
Something you want, sweet?
Well, Maisie's gone to her room. I hate to disturb her.
Let me get it for you, whatever it is.
Oh, thank you, dear. It's just that...
Yes?
Well, you may think it's a little odd, but... I have this funny little desire for a glass of wine.
Don't apologize, darling. There's nothing wrong in a glass of wine. Is there any in the pantry?
Well, no, dear, that's just it. A trip down to the cellar.
Not another word. My pleasure is to serve you, my dear.
The husband gets up. He puts his newspaper aside and leaves the room where his pretty young wife sits by the fireside. Walks down the hallway to the cellar entrance, pausing on the way to pick up a candle from the table by the stairs. Lights the candle, opens the little doorway. The candle flickers, casting a fitful yellow light, darkening the shadows where its beams fail to penetrate. Stuart Mason starts down the stairs.
Stuart! Stuart! Oh! Stuart, answer me! Maisie! Maisie, help me! Help!
Oh, what is it, madam? What is it?
Oh, quickly, run for Dr. Lipton. Oh. Mr. Mason's fallen down the cellar stairs. He's hurt. I'm afraid he's badly hurt.
Oh, it must be a terrible shock, Mrs. Mason. I know. If you take a sleeping powder...
Oh, no, doctor. No, it was my fault. My silly wish for a glass of wine. If I hadn't asked him... No, doctor, the least I can do is to face my grief. That's the least I can do for poor Stuart.
If you wish, Mrs. Mason, I understand. Death is a terrible thing. When it comes so suddenly to one so young, it is most terrible of all.
Yes, it is terrible. A broken neck, falling down the cellar stairs by flickering candlelight on a simple and hardly necessary errand.
My dear... As a close friend of both your late husband and yourself, I feel justified in asking you to contain your grief. After all, you're young, and if I may say so, pretty.
Nelson, you are sweet. I simply do not know how I would have lived through these long, long months without poor dear Stuart's friends, particularly you.
This brings me to a point, my dear. I've meant to discuss it with you. I begin to feel something slightly more than respect for you, Louise. If I may take the liberty...
Nelson, watch your words. Look out, Nelson. A pretty blonde widow with wide blue eyes. So delicate and fragile. Watch your step.
Oh, my loneliness in this house. At night, the floors creak. They seem to try to speak with me. Maisie does her best, but it's still so... So... Well, you know... You are lonely too, aren't you?
I must confess, Louise, that I am. Now see here, young lady. We're going to start a new life for you.
Oh, Nelson. Some cream for Mrs. Church, Maisie.
Yes, madam. Oh, thank you. You know, Louise, this is the nicest idea. Having coffee with our menfolk, I mean. I always hated the idea of the ladies withdrawing while the men had their port alone after dinner.
Well, I can't say I mind when our hostess is as lovely a bride as Louise. Eh, Nelson? Do you agree, old man?
Of course I agree. After all, I married her.
How you men do go on. Don't they, Alice?
Let them, dear. It's one of their
few pleasures.
I have another pleasure I want to share with you, Alice. Friend?
Yes, Nelson?
Louise is absolute talent with the mandolin.
Oh, Nelson, please.
The mandolin, yes, I seem to remember you played very well, Louise.
Oh, do, Louise, please.
Well, really, I... Well, my talent is so small.
No, we won't take no for an answer, darling. Here it is. Now, what shall your first selection be?
Oh, dear. One of the strings is missing.
Oh,
missing?
Well, I was tuning it yesterday. One of the strings broke, and I didn't get downtown to buy a new one. Oh, I am sorry, truly, I am. Perhaps next time you're here.
Too bad. Really too bad. We've been so nice. Recently married young lady with a gaily beribboned mandolin in her lap in a lamplit room. It would have been so nice. In fact, as they prepared for sleep, Nelson Carter said just that.
Too bad about your mandolin string, dear. It would have been so nice to hear you play tonight.
Ooh.
What is it, dear?
Oh, the sheets are icy. It must be really cold outside.
Well, Fred Church said it was.
And you are so susceptible to colds. Darling, we've got to have a hot water bottle.
Well, ring for Maisie, why don't you?
Well, she was exhausted, poor dear. She worked so hard cooking and serving dinner. It seems unfair to disturb her.
All right, I'll get it. Do you know where it is?
In the kitchen cabinet, dear. Right in front.
All right, I'd better take a candle.
And use the back stairs, darling. It's shorter that way.
Once again, a young man lights his way through a dark house, toward a steep stairway by the flickering flame of a candle. Once again, a young man makes his way along a carpeted hallway, starts a hurried descent of wooden stairs.
Nelson! Nelson! What happened?
Right, Maisie. Your mistress will rest now. I gave her a sedative.
Oh, poor woman. Oh, poor child.
Poor. This will be the second fortune she inherits. Hardly poor.
Two accidents like that. Oh, doctor, it's like the poor girl was accursed.
Aye, it is. Well, things like this happen. As you say, two accidents and so much alike. I shall probably recommend that your mistress builds herself a new house with no cellar and all on one floor.
Whatever for, sir?
No stairs, my girl. No stairs for anyone to fall down and break his neck. Well, I'm on my way. No visitors allowed.
No visitors. And no stairs in a new house. Well, perhaps. Certainly for another year at least, the mandolin will be silent. I think that may be counted upon. That and the widow's weeds, and the tearful glances from wide blue eyes. Of course, there was one item that no one counted on.
You sent for me, Inspector.
I did, Peck. What do you think of this?
Anonymous, sir.
Yes. Read it, will you?
Inspector Higley, don't file this letter in the waste paper basket. I am not writing it without due thought and consideration. I cannot let you have my name as yet. But think of this. Two young men of wealth and standing in the community have died via falls downstairs with broken necks as the consequences. Don't you think at least a perfunctory investigation is called for? Don't you think so? And it's signed... An anxious friend.
Yes. Well, Sergeant?
Well, someone with an education, wrote it.
Someone who hints he or she will come forward if we find anything. I cannot let you have my name yet.
Yes, I noticed that, sir.
Well, Sergeant, wear your best suit tomorrow. You and I are going calling on a young widow in Oxford Street. I understand she plays the mandolin. Rather well, in fact. Rather well.
Yes, she played rather well. And a string of that mandolin on which she played can be seen today in the Black Museum.
In just a moment, we will continue with the Black Museum starring Orson Welles. ¶¶
And now we continue with The Black Museum, starring Orson Welles.
Two young men dead, with broken necks. Both cases certified. Accidental death. And then an anonymous letter. Inspector Higley and Sergeant Peck paid their call. In fact, they paid two calls. The first on Dr. Lipton.
I'm rather glad you dropped in, Inspector. I know there's been whispering. Two unfortunate accidents like this, it would lead to rumors.
Rumors? I see. Such as...
The usual thing, that Stuart Evans and Nelson Carter may have been helped to fall down the stairs.
You mean pushed?
Something of the sort.
And your opinion, Doctor?
My opinion is certified on the death certificate, sir. Accidental deaths, both of them.
I see. Well, thank you, Doctor. I'm glad you're so certain.
Yes, the good doctor appears quite certain. Nonetheless, Inspector Higley and Sergeant Peck made their second visit.
Oh, I'm so glad you came to see me, Inspector.
Thank you. It's not too often that the police are welcome.
No, I suppose not. But, well, I can't help hearing about the things that people are saying. Maisie brings home so many odd tales.
I was wondering, Mrs... Sergeant, interested in music?
Quite a good-looking instrument, ma'am.
I shall never play it again.
Oh? Why not?
Both Nelson and Stuart loved the music. I cannot get over the fact that I took a mean excuse and refused to play the night that Nelson died.
Oh? An excuse?
Yes. You see, the Churches, Alice and Fred, were here.
I see.
Nelson was pressing me to play. I refused. Mm-hmm. I used a missing string as an excuse, when I had a stock of strings on hand and could have replaced the missing one. I refused Nelson that last pleasure.
Tell me, do you always keep a stock of mandolin strings on hand, ma'am?
Yes, in the cold weather I do.
I see.
When the temperature drops, the strings seem to get brittle.
Quite.
They break quite easily.
And where do you buy your mandolin strings, Mrs. Carter?
At Murchison's music shop on the High Street. Oh, Inspector.
Yes?
Sergeant, I appeal to you as men of the world. Can't you help me scotch these dreadful things that people are saying? Can you? Would you? Please?
The inspector and the sergeant said they'd try, and they did. Their business was facts. One fact turned up immediately upon their contact with Mr. Murchison at the music shop on High Street.
He showed me the bill of sale, Inspector.
Uh-huh.
She bought the strings, sent the maid for him with a written order 3 days after this Carter fellow was buried.
Interesting. Now, why would a woman who says she had a stock of strings on hand the night her husband died, and says further that she'll never play again, buy mandolin strings shortly after the funeral?
An interesting contradiction in dates and actions. A further interesting contradiction came to light some 3 months later.
Another of those anonymous letters, Sergeant. Just, she's playing that mandolin again. I seem to remember, Sergeant, that Mrs. Carter told us she'd never touch the instrument again.
Such contradictory behavior seemed to indicate another call. The inspector dropped in on Louise Evans Carter to her mandolin.
Inspector Higley, how nice. All right, Maisie.
Yes, madam.
Inspector, my friend Clifford West.
How are you, sir?
Inspector, I'm afraid you've caught me in a fib. Is that very bad?
A fib? Well, it couldn't be bad. Not from you, Louise.
I don't quite follow, Mrs. Carter.
I told you some time ago I'd never play my mandolin again. And you've heard me playing.
Yes, so you did. And so I have. But there must be a good reason, I assume.
Oh, but there is. You tell him, Clifford, dear.
As it happens, sir, we are both very, very happy, and music seemed extremely apropos. You see, sir, Mrs. Carter, Louise, has just done me the honor to consent to be my wife.
Number three. The inspector sensed the tension in Midhaven. He waited. All of Midhaven seemed to be waiting with him. The first action came from an unexpected quarter.
Inspector Higley, I demand you trace this letter for me at once.
May I see your letter, sir?
Here.
I see.
Mr. West, two men have died with broken necks. Are you the third? Are you entering the den of the tigress? Tracing a letter like this is not the easiest.
There was no question in the inspector's mind that the author of Clifford West's letter was the same party who had written the two notes addressed to the inspector himself. A brief comparison of the handwriting removed what little doubt the inspector had. And Sergeant Peck dropped in on the small Midhaven post office.
This your postmark?
That's right, sir. Of course it is.
Ever see this envelope before?
Well, maybe. Maybe not. Seen hundreds like it. You can buy that cheap kind in any stationery shop in Midhaven.
Blank, Inspector.
Nothing.
I expected as much.
Do you think that West fellow will be scared off, sir?
I doubt it. Sergeant, take this copy over to the Midhaven Gazette, will you? I want it run in every edition for a week.
Think you'll get an answer, sir?
Well, remember the first letter. I cannot let you have my name as yet.
Uh-huh.
Perhaps the party concerned will feel now is the time to reveal himself or herself, as the case may be. That promise of absolute privacy may do the trick.
I saw your advertisement, Inspector. I came. I hope you can protect me if I'm wrong. I hope I'm wrong. I sincerely do hope so.
Your confidence will be respected, Mrs. Church.
Thank you, sir. I trust you don't feel there's any jealousy involved of any kind.
My job is facts, ma'am. Do you have any?
I don't know. You see, Stuart and Nelson both were young men of whom my husband and I were very fond.
Uh-huh.
And I remember so distinctly how disturbed Louise seemed when we asked her to play that night. She seemed upset over our discovery of the missing string on that mandolin. I guess that's all, Inspector.
It's not very much, is it?
No. No, it's not. But it seems so peculiar. And the mandolin, always that mandolin. Inspector, how could a mandolin be used to kill anyone?
I don't know yet, even if anyone was killed. However, I'd like to find out. Mrs. Church, have you any idea of Mrs. Carter's social engagements? I mean, when, for instance, is she probably out of her house for a length of time? You can advise us as to any such matter.
It seems Mrs. Carter attended the ladies' auxiliary of the local church each Wednesday afternoon, an activity a respectable young widow would be expected to enjoy. And it was Wednesday afternoon when the inspector and the sergeant called.
The mistress isn't in, sir.
I doubt if she'll be too long. May we wait?
If you wish to, sir.
The inspector went into the sitting room. Sergeant drifted toward the kitchen. Maisie, safely occupied by the good sergeant, Inspector Higley, swiftly found the cellar stairs. Carefully he moved down, examining each step, each lift and tread, each section of the baseboard. Halfway down.
Well, interesting to say the least.
Upstairs now to the back stairway. Again, the careful examination. Again, about halfway down.
They'll do it every time, every single time.
Then, quietly into the kitchen.
Sergeant?
Yes, sir?
I don't think we'll wait any longer.
I'm sorry, sir. The mistress went along to the vestry and she ought to be...
Oh, that's all right. Just tell her we called, will you? Come along, Sergeant. We'll drop back another time.
And the two policemen left the house to return to the inspector's office.
It's something, Sergeant. Not much, but something.
It convinces me, sir.
And me. But how about a jury?
I don't know, sir. Of course, if we had a bit more, the nails themselves, sir. And then,
yes.
And then there's the business of buying that stock of mandolin strings.
Sergeant, we'll drop in on Mrs. Carter this evening. Do you by any chance play the mandolin?
It was nice of you to come back so soon, Inspector. I do hope you've been able to help me with all that mean whispering I told you about.
I wish we could, ma'am. I wish we could. Did I tell you that Sergeant Peck is interested in the mandolin?
Why, no, you didn't.
May I, ma'am?
Oh, certainly.
Yes, a lovely tone, ma'am.
Yes, it has.
Quite a romantic instrument, I believe.
It goes back to the troubadours in France, centuries ago.
Yes, I've heard. It certainly had its place in your life, Mrs. Carter.
Yes,
I dare say it has.
I've been wondering about something, Mrs. Carter. I hope you can help me.
Well, if I can, I will, of course.
We checked with Mr. Murchison at his music shop.
Oh?
Yes, he tells us you purchased a stock of strings shortly after Mr. Carter's death, not just before, as you told us.
Well, then I'd forgotten the exact date.
It seems rather peculiar that you should forget that after you made such a point of it to us.
I was under a terrible strain. I'm sure... If you'd stop plucking that A-string, Sergeant, my nerves are...
Oh, I'm sorry, ma'am. I didn't mean to break it. I'll get you a new one.
That won't be necessary, Sergeant. I have extras right here in this drawer. That was the A-string, wasn't it?
I'm rather surprised, Mrs. Carter. A woman of your obvious means keeping nails, and bent ones at that, in a drawer of a desk in her sitting room.
I forgot to throw them away.
Yes, I dare say you did. May I have them, please?
You'll leave them alone.
I dare say also that they'll fit exactly into certain holes in the baseboards of your cellar and back stairs, just above the steps where someone unsuspecting would trip over a tightly stretched mandolin string stretched between two nails, like these, Mrs. Carter. You're taken in charge, madam. The charge is willful murder of your two husbands. I must warn you that anything you may say may be taken down in...
And so, once and for all, the mandolin string was silenced. Can be seen today in the Black Museum.
Orson Welles will be back with you in just a moment. Here in person is Orson Welles.
Louise Evans Mason Carter was tried for murder. The police stated facts and produced evidence. But Louise wept and lifted those blue eyes of hers to heaven, and the jury disagreed, and she was not convicted. Not in court. She was convicted by her neighbors and by her friends. They knew. And so, Louise Evans Mason Carter moved away, far north, to Scotland, alone. And there she died some 20 years later, still alone. And now, until next time, do we meet in this same place and I tell you another story of the Black Museum, I remain, as always, obediently yours.
The Black Museum, starring Orson Welles, is presented by arrangement with Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer Radio Attractions. The program is written by Ara Marion, with original music composed and conducted by Sidney Torch. Produced by Harry Allen Towers. Thank you.
Let's stay on with our British theme for today, and we're going to have an episode of Spy Catcher. This is from 1960, and it's called One Must Die.
Spy Catcher. A series of true stories of the unceasing search for enemy spies in wartime, based on the memoirs of Lieutenant Colonel Oreste Pinto of the Allied Counterintelligence Service.
In 1940, Norway, Denmark, Holland, Belgium, and France had been occupied by the Germans, and Britain awaited invasion. The spies who came to Britain were resolute and often courageous men. And the common method was to infiltrate their spies among genuine patriots who during the war made spectacular escapes from the occupied country. The quickest but most dangerous escape route was by boat, usually an open boat, across the North Sea. Throughout the war, I was responsible for the interrogation of escapers and suspected spies. This is the story of one escape boat that left the Dutch coast in the spring of 1942. It was a small motorboat. It was unseaworthy, and it had a faulty engine. In it were three men, an elderly, timid man named Johannes Dronkers, a young man named Jan Lerten, and a student of Dutch Malayan parentage named Hans Delden. I told their story, One Must Die.
Where are we now, Jan?
I don't know. We've lost a lot of time. I'd like another hour of darkness.
It's getting night already. The patrols will be looking out for us. We left at 9 o'clock last night. It's now 6:10. What speed did we make, Jan?
Including the breakdown, about 5 knots.
9 hours at 5 knots? That leaves only 10-15 miles to go.
If we came as the crow flies.
How is the old man? Got over his seasickness?
I think so. Ah, here he is. Good morning, Mr. Drunkard.
Morning, Hans. Morning, Jan.
Coffee, Mr. Drunkers?
Thank you.
But never mind, it's hot, Mr. Drunkers.
Thank you, Hank.
What are you going to do when we get to England, Jan?
What we agree to do. Join the Free Dutch Army.
And you, sir, what will you do?
What can I do? You're lucky, both of you. You'll be welcome. They need soldiers. I'll be just another old man. Another mouth to feed. And they say they're short of food in England, too.
Hans!
Huh?
There's a plane!
What?
Can you see it?
Oh, yes!
Whose is it?
I don't know. Not light enough. Binoculars, please.
It's turning.
I think it's... Just a moment, Jan. I think it's English.
Quick, Mr. Drunkard, our flag. Show our flag.
Hey! Oh, God, please make it English. Please make it English.
Quick, give me an end of it. Show our flag. Wave to him. Wave to him.
Hey! Did you see, Jan? It's English!
We're Dutchmen!
Free
Dutchmen!
Free Dutchmen!
Yes, they were Dutchmen, but they were not yet free. They had braved the dangers of the North Sea in wartime, but each boatload of men, however brave, was a mixed blessing. Most of them were patriots, but some we knew were spies. And who were they? For the safety of Great Britain, each escaper had to be screened and interrogated. Come in. Oh, thank you, Waterloo.
Sir?
Please sit down.
Thank you, sir.
Your name, please?
Lerten, sir. Jan Lerten.
Nationality?
Dutch, sir.
Born?
Rotterdam, sir.
Age?
26.
When did you arrive in England?
2 days ago, sir.
And why have you come here?
To escape from the Germans, sir, and to join the Free Dutch Army. I'm a trained soldier, sir. I did my training before the occupation.
Tell me your story.
You mean how we escaped, sir?
Yes.
Well, we came in a small boat from Rotterdam 2 nights ago.
Did you have any trouble making your escape?
No, sir.
Was it your boat?
No, sir. It belongs to Mr. Drunkers. He bought it.
Who organized the escape?
I suppose Mr. Drunker, sir. He found this boat and let us join him.
Yes, tell me about joining him.
Yes, sir. Well, I've been wanting for some time to come to England to be away from the Germans. To join the Free Dutch Army in England. And I was told that Mr. Drunkard was also trying to get to England.
Who told you?
A friend, sir. You know how it is. Mr. Drunkard was in trouble with the Gestapo.
Oh? What kind of trouble?
Well, for dealing in the black market, sir. I was told that he'd gone to Rotterdam to try to get to England. I was born in Rotterdam, sir, so I went there to find him.
Well, if he was hiding from the Gestapo, did you expect to find him?
Well, this friend, sir, gave me an address where I could find him. A cafe.
Which cafe?
The Cafe Atlanta, sir.
Hmm. Now, you went to this cafe and met him?
Yes, sir.
Was he pleased to see you?
Oh, yes, sir. He's an old friend. I've known him since I was a boy.
Did he ask you to go with him?
No, sir. I asked if I could join him, and he was pleased about it. He said he'd been offered a boat. It was an old one, and he needed someone with him in case of trouble.
What kind of trouble?
Well, a storm, sir, or the engine failing.
Do you know about engines?
Not very much, sir. I can tinker with them. But it was a very simple engine and not a very good one.
But it got you here.
Yes, sir.
There were three of you on this escape.
Yes, sir, myself, Mr. Drunkers, and my friend Hans Delden.
Hmm. Now, tell me about Delden.
We were students together in Rotterdam. Malayan Dutch, sir. His parents are in Malaya.
Where did you meet him?
In Rotterdam, sir.
By arrangement?
No, sir, but just by chance.
Did you tell him why you'd come to Rotterdam?
No, sir.
Well, how did he come to join you?
I told him about it later, sir, when we'd become friends again. He said he wanted to join the Dutch army, sir.
And when you asked Mr. Drunkers if a third man could join this escape, what did he say?
He said no. He didn't want a third person. He said the boat was too small.
Well, what made him change his mind?
I did, sir. I said that if I was joining the Dutch army, so was Hans.
What did he say to that?
Well, he said that if Hans promised to join the Free Dutch Army, he would take us both.
So it was on your insistence that Hans Delden came with you?
Yes, sir. It was.
Delden, where did you meet this friend, Jan Lerton?
In the street, sir.
Where?
Rotterdam, sir. Near my home.
How long was it since you'd last seen him?
Since we were at school, sir. About 10 years.
And was he pleased to see you?
No, sir. Not at first. He was a bit jumpy and said he didn't want to be seen in the street. He asked if we could speak in my rooms.
So you took him to your rooms and he told you this story of escaping to England?
No, sir. We just talked about old school friends and what had happened to them. He said he was on holiday from The Hague. It was later, many days later.
How many?
4 days, I think, sir. It was the next Thursday.
Why did he tell you then?
We were talking about the English radio, about listening to the BBC News, and he told me in confidence that he was hoping to escape to England to fight with the Free Dutch Army.
Did he tell you how?
No, sir.
And he asked you to join him?
No, sir. I asked him if I could join him.
What did he say?
He said he would ask his friend. Later, he told me his friend had said no. He was very upset about it and took me to see his friend.
Who was this friend?
Why, Mr. Drunkers, sir.
What did he say?
At first, he would not have me. He said the boat was too small.
So Jan Lerton used his influence to get you into this escape party?
Yes, sir.
I see. Well, that will be all for the moment. Well, I must congratulate you on organizing this escape, Mr. Drunkers.
Thank you, sir.
As you know, I've already been talking to your two young friends, and there are one or two points in their stories that I'd like to get clear.
Of course, sir.
So, would you tell me your story in full from the beginning?
Yes, sir. My name is Johannes Jacobus Drunkers. I lived at The Hague. I'm married, but we have no children, sir. I was a postal clerk, a small position, sir, not well paid. Well, even before the war, we were not well off, and with the occupation and the price of everything going up, it is impossible to live on my small salary. We hadn't enough food, and my wife became ill. I'm not a very strong man, sir, and not a very brave one. I heard that one could make money in the black market. Well, even a clerk of the postal service was useful to the black market, so I was able to sell food. It was German food, sir, stolen food. If things had gone well, I admit I would have stayed in Holland with my wife, but one day the Gestapo began to round up the black market, and then a friend came to my house to warn me that the Gestapo knew about me.
What day was this? Hmm?
Oh, it was a Sunday morning, sir, about 3 weeks ago. He came to my home and said I should leave immediately. I told my wife, and she said I should go.
Well, I gave all the money I had saved, except about £50 to get away with, and I went to Rotterdam.
Why to Rotterdam?
Well, my friend advised me that Rotterdam was best, and I'm not known there. He told me to go to a cafe, the Cafe Atlanta, and to try to make a friend there. He said I could meet people there from the harbor who might help me, but I must be careful to get to know them well first.
Hmm. And you were able to meet a harbor official?
Oh, I'd gone there for coffee for 3 days before we even spoke, sir. Then for 2 days, when we met, we spoke about just anything, and I learned that he worked at the harbor. Later, when I felt I could trust him, I told him that I needed a boat, and he said he might be able to help me.
You told him that you were in trouble with the Gestapo?
Oh, no, sir. No. At first, I told him I was in trouble with the Germans. Just the Germans. And he said he would be glad to help me if he could.
And when he said that he might be able to help you, what happened then?
He said he had a small motorboat in the harbor, not a very good one, but it might make the journey to England if I was really desperate. I said I was. And I said I would buy it from him no matter how bad it was if he thought it could get me to England. He said it wasn't any use to him because there was so little petrol.
Can you navigate a boat?
No, sir. But he said he had authority to take this boat out of the harbor. He would do this while I was hidden in the cabin. We'd go down the coast and then he'd go ashore and I was to steer west. Just to keep going west.
And it was then up to you?
Yes, sir.
Were you afraid?
There was no other way. But then things began to go right for me. When I went to the cafe that evening, Jan was there, and he brought me news that my wife was well and the Germans had not arrested her. And he wanted to come with me, sir, and he knew about boats. Well, he knew about engines.
Weren't you surprised that he was able to find you so easily?
No, sir. You see, this friend who told me about the cafe...
But didn't you feel that if Jan Lurton could find you so easily, the Gestapo could also find you?
Yes, sir. That's why I was so anxious to get away quickly.
There's an air raid warning, sir. A red warning.
Oh, thank you. I think we'll have to break now, Mr. Drunkers.
This is
an air raid warning, and I'm afraid our headquarters are in what we call Bomb Alley, so you must go to the shelter.
Yes, sir.
The orderly will take you. We'll continue our talk later.
Thank you, sir.
This way, please. Sorry, sir. I thought you'd gone to the shelter.
Huh? Oh, no. I've got some work to do. I think I'll sit this one out.
Some papers for your signature, sir. Clearance orders.
Yeah, thank you, Captain. How was your lot this morning?
Oh, a pretty straightforward bunch. The crew of a fishing boat out of Brittany. They doused the lights and made off in the night. They all wanted to come except two, and they had to come.
Well, at least we get a fishing boat out of that.
Yeah, and some recruits for the French Navy. What do we get out of yours?
An old motorboat, two patriots, and a spy.
Certain, sir?
Yes.
Evidence?
Not yet.
Do you know which one?
Yes. Come in. Well, thank you, Orderly. Come in, Mr. Drunkers. Do sit down.
Thank you, sir.
Now, where were we, Mr. Drunkers? Oh, yes, your young friend Jan Lurton had arrived at the Cafe Atlanta and had found you there, and I asked you if you knew that the Gestapo might find you just as quickly.
Yes. I'd thought of that, but all the time I'd been afraid that the Gestapo would come before the boat was ready. But I had to wait until there was enough petrol.
And when there was enough petrol, what happened?
Well, by this time, sir, there was Jan and also Hans. My friend was not pleased about this, but he agreed. He took us one at a time to his office at the harbor, and then one at a time to his boat, and hid us in the cabin.
All right. Well, now you're on board.
Yes, sir. Well, my friend was right. It was a very small cabin, and we were there for hours. In the evening, my friend came, and he knocked on the cabin as a signal. And then we heard the engine start, and we began to move. After a time, my friend opened the cabin and let us out. He then steered into the shore, sir, and it was getting quite dark. He pointed to the west and said we should steer that way. I paid him, and he wished us luck, and then he jumped out and waded ashore.
How much did you pay him?
Oh, 450 guilders, sir, £40.
Why £40?
It's all I had, sir.
This was the bargain that you'd made in the cafe, £40.
£40, or whatever I had left when he helped us to escape.
Mr. Drunkers, can you tell me why your friend should wish to commit suicide for £40?
Sir?
Well, why should he?
I don't understand, sir.
You may not know it, but we know that every boat in Dutch waters and in Belgian and French waters is registered by the Germans. This man is a harbor official. He's known to own this boat. He's seen to take it out of the harbor. Next morning, the boat is missing. What will happen to him?
I don't know, sir. I hadn't thought of that.
No, but presumably he had. If he's a harbor official, he works for the Germans. A boat registered in his name is now missing. He's in trouble, isn't he?
Yes, sir.
For £40.
But he said he wanted to do this for me, sir. He wanted to help me. There are many good patriots who have to work for the Germans.
Very well. Another point. You told me that you went to Rotterdam and went to the Café Atlanta so that you might meet someone from the harbour who could help you to escape.
Yes, sir.
Well, don't you think you would have been safer, that you might even have had more chance if you'd gone to a dockside café to meet someone from the harbour?
There are so many cafés I could have gone to, sir. I was told to go to this.
No, you're misunderstanding my question. I know the Café Atlanta. It's very far from being a dockside café. It's a luxury café, isn't it?
Yes, sir.
And it's a favourite café of the Germans.
No, sir, they go there, but they go everywhere.
In this café, this luxury café, this resort of Germans and German sympathisers, you meet a man who offers to sell you a boat.
It wasn't like that, sir. I went there several times. I got to know this man. He was a Dutchman.
And when he offers to sell you a boat, which you can't sail, there arrives at this same café a young man who can sail.
You mean Jan, sir? Oh, no, it wasn't like that. I've known Jan for years, sir. I've known him ever since he was a boy. He's an honest, good Dutch boy, sir. A good Dutch patriot. You can check it, sir. All that I've told you is true.
Yes, I believe that. I believe that all you've told me is true. But I've not been told everything. Now, Drunkers, I'm going to ask you four questions. And you will tell me the truth.
Yes, sir.
First, why, when the Gestapo were after you, did this friend at The Hague send you to the notorious Café Atlanta? Why did this same friend send Jan Leuven to join you just at the right moment? Are you satisfied that your meeting with the harbour official at the Café Atlanta was as accidental as you say it was? And was the risk he took for you a reasonable one?
Sir, there is no longer reason under the Germans.
Go on.
Sir, you think our escape was too easy?
Yes, I think it was.
Well, perhaps it was easier than other escapes you've heard of. Perhaps I was lucky to meet this man. Perhaps I was lucky that Jan and his friend were able to help me. Perhaps I don't deserve this luck. But, sir, if I had not been lucky, I wouldn't be here.
That's all you have to say?
Yes.
Well, it's not all I have to say. I don't believe your story.
I'll swear on...
I won't accept that. I intend to keep you here until I know the truth.
Sir, in the name of the God I worship, and in the name of my dead father whom I love, I swear to you that I am faithful to my country and to the House of Orange. Every word I have told you is true.
Go on.
With respect to you, sir, I've told you my story truthfully, that I came here to seek safety and freedom. And what have I found?
Well, what have you found?
I'm writing to our queen about you, and to the King of England, and to Mr. Churchill.
You are free to write to whom you wish, but you are not free to leave this building until I say so.
I've done nothing wrong.
If that is so, you've nothing to fear. Sit down, Lugan. This friend at The Hague, this friend who sent you to Rotterdam, how did you meet him?
He was a friend of Mr. Drunkard's.
How did you meet him?
Well, as I told you...
I don't want to know what you told me. How did you meet him? Did you know him before?
No, sir. It was when Mr. Drunkard did not turn up at the office. I thought he must be ill, so I went to his house.
Who was there?
Well, his wife, sir, and this friend.
Well?
His wife was very upset and said Mr. Drunkard's had gone away. His friend told me that Mr. Drunkard's was wanted by the Gestapo for dealing in the black market. I was very worried about it, and he told me Mr. Drunkard's was trying to get to England. And I said I wanted to go to England. We talked about it, and he said that he might have some news of Mr. Drunkard's in a few days. But he said not to go near the house as they expected the Gestapo to call.
They expected the Gestapo to call? When did you next see this friend?
2 days later, sir. He met me near my office. And he asked me if I still wanted to go to England, and I said yes. He asked me if I would take a message to Mr. Drunkers that his wife was well and that the Gestapo had not arrested her. Then he gave me the address where I could meet him.
Did you take a letter to him?
No, sir. Just this news about his wife.
And when you went there, you were quite determined to join him?
Yes, sir. If he was going. I didn't think he could make the journey by himself.
Why should he make it at all?
Well, sir, the penalty for dealing in black market is death.
There are other things than black marketing for which the penalty is death.
Yes, sir.
I was still certain that I had a spy in my net. Two patriots and one spy. But without evidence, I had no case. Spies had no value to their masters unless they could get their information back. On the following evening, I continued my examination of their belongings. I'd eliminated every item excepting two books. A book on advanced mathematics belonging to Delden, suspicious, but he said he was a student engineer, and a Dutch-English dictionary belonging to Drunkards. Also suspicious, but understandable. I studied them against my table lamp, page by page. I was at page 432 when I first saw it. A tiny pinprick under the capital letter F. And on the next page, another pinprick under a small R. Under an O. Under an E. Under a K. Under an E. And under an N. Perkin. This was it. The markings continued on successive pages. It would be the address of a contact. But luckily it was straightforward. And now it was only a matter of patience.
I have the three men here, sir.
You'll bring them in.
Sir. This way.
Do come forward, please.
Yes, sir.
Hans Delden.
Sir?
You still wish to join the Free Dutch Army?
Yes, sir.
Jan Luffen?
Yes, sir.
Very good. A car is waiting downstairs to take you to your barracks. You can collect your belongings on the way out. I'm sorry to have detained you so long. Congratulations and good luck.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you, sir.
This way, please.
Not you, Drunkard. I found this amongst your belongings. Can you explain it?
What, sir? That bit of paper?
Not the paper, the addresses. You wish to read them? Then I'll read them. Fröken Annette Skala, Grev Manigarten, 13-5, Stockholm. And Fernando Lorore, Roa Souza Martin, Lisbon. Two addresses in neutral capitals. You came here to spy. This is where you had to send your information.
In my belongings?
In your dictionary. Who marked this for you? Was it Herr Strauss?
No, sir. It must be some mistake.
It's no mistake, Drunkers. We have checked the addresses. They're spy boxes, and you came here as a spy. Well, what's your story now?
Please, sir, you're making a mistake.
Am I? Sit down. Sit down and listen to my story.
Yes, sir.
You were in the black market. That part of it is true.
Yes, sir.
You were warned by your friends, but you didn't get away. You were caught by the Gestapo. The penalty was death. They offered you your life if you would work for them. They gave you a little training, and they marked this dictionary for you with two addresses. They said they'd get you safely to England to spy for them. What did they want to know?
No, sir.
Very well. They sent you to the Café Atlanta to contact one of their agents. He was to provide you with a boat and petrol, but he reported that you were incapable of taking it to England alone.
No, sir, please. I assure you...
This man whom Jan Leuven met at your house wasn't a friend. He was from the Gestapo, keeping an eye on your wife. Jan Leuven was a gift to them. A young patriot who could sail a boat and who thought you were honest and would vouch for you. So he sent him to join you. Jan had a friend in Rotterdam. This was even better luck. Two young patriots who would bring you safely to England and vouch for you. The lovable old man who had befriended them. Oh, the Gestapo did well by you. What else did they offer you beside your life? A pension for your wife?
Yes, sir.
Will they pay it? Will they pay it now?
No, sir.
When you're ready, I'll take your statement. And this time, the true story. Johannes Jacobus Dronkers was tried at the Central Criminal Court before Mr. Justice Rottersley in November 1942. He was condemned to death. He appealed, and his appeal was rejected. On December the 31st, 1942, he was hanged at Wandsworth Prison.
You've been listening to Spycatcher, with Bernard Archer as Colonel Oreste Pinto. The script was written by Robert Barr, and the program produced for the BBC by Charles Maxwell.
That's it for this week. We'll be back next week with more old-time radio. I hope you can join us then. Till then, this is Jim Dolan, thanking you for listening.